Ambassador Hoagland, thank you so much for joining us. I know you are a very busy man, and you are actually retiring this week.
You're very welcome. It's always a pleasure to do this. It's a pleasure to talk with you. And there is always time to talk diplomacy and talk bilateral relations.
Well, you recently visited Central Asia.
I did.
What kind of message did you carry this time?
It's interesting you asked, because this was my last official trip to several countries in Central Asia and the South Caucasus. And I wanted to, more than anything else, meet with the foreign ministers whom I have known for 10 years and more. And I wanted to thank them for their partnership. I wanted to thank them for their high-level professionalism. And so it had a personal aspect to it. At each stop, I wanted to step back from the daily, we want to talk about this, or we want to complain about that, or we want to raise this issue. I wanted to take a bigger view. And so in each stop, I asked my very good, respected colleagues, what would you say is the ideal relationship between the United States and your country?
Very interesting. Well, one of the issues that they have been raising a lot lately is the threat of ISIS, as they see it. So how worried is this administration about Islamic State, the presence or the impact of this group in and on Central Asia?
Well, if you ask what is the worry of this American administration,
yes,
about ISIS, the Islamic State, sometimes called Daesh, it's something that we have to take very seriously. It's a new formation of a threat, not just to us, but to many countries in the world. How seriously worried are we about the threat to Central Asia? There is reason to be concerned, because there have been a number of citizens of various countries of Central Asia who have gone to Syria to fight with ISIS. And inevitably, they are going to return to their countries. Now, we would judge that while we must be vigilant, while we need to pay close attention, this is not yet a major serious threat to the security and governments and peoples of Central Asia.
But it is a factor.
It's a factor. It's reality, and we have to always pay attention to reality. So, yes, we need to watch closely. We need to consult with our government-to-government partners. We need to pay attention to international security. But I want to emphasize, it's not like the barbarians are at the doorstep ready to sweep into all of Central Asia.
That's not how you see it.
That's not how we see it, the U.S. government. That's right.
Well, one of the bullet points from the U.S. diplomats has always been that America is not playing any games with Russia or China in Central Asia. We hear that a lot, but they don't think so. I mean, Russia and China clearly wants you out of the region. So the question is, are you in or out?
What's the short answer? We're in. We're in for the long term. We were among the very first countries in the world that recognized the independence of the new states of Central Asia soon after the Rasbat, after the fall of the Soviet Union. We have been there for 23, 24 years. We have built new embassies across Central Asia. We are not about to leave anytime soon. At the same time, we emphasize to our partners in each country, we fully support your independence, your sovereignty, your territorial integrity, but we don't demand that you make a choice of your partners. That's your responsibility. Naturally, Russia's going to be a partner because of history, geography, everything that goes along with that. China is increasingly wealthy, increasingly active in Central Asia, and in some ways that's quite good. In fact, we have had consultations with China to see if we can understand each other's new Silk Road initiatives a little bit better. So it's not a competition. I know that other countries see it as a competition. We don't. We see it as a partnership.
But it is, in some ways, it is affecting the way, for example, Russia is working in Central Asia, is affecting your relationship with certain countries in the region. I mean, Kyrgyzstan is a perfect example.
Yeah.
And you are going to send a new ambassador there very soon. Do you believe that that relationship can be improved in the near term?
In the near term, I think we need to be strategically patient, which means it'll take a little bit more time. But let's look back.
Sure.
Over 20 years, we have seen not only with our relationships, diplomatic relationships in Central Asia, but in many parts of the world. It's natural. Relationships rise and then they fall, and they rise and they fall. Diplomatic relationships are very much like personal family relationships. There can be big problems, but you have to want to surmount those problems. You have to want to get back to a positive, even, respectful keel with each other. That's very important. And I firmly believe that that's what's going to happen with our relationship, for example, in Kyrgyzstan. Are we in a little bit of a difficult period right now? Yes. No one can deny that. But we have had a long relationship, and I firmly believe that as time goes by, we will find ways to make that a mutually respectful and mutually positive relationship again. I have no doubt.
You have served as U.S. ambassador in three countries in Central Asia.
Yes.
Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, and Turkmenistan.
Turkmenistan is chargé d'affaires for
yes,
1 year.
Yes, chief of mission.
To be fair.
Yes. And you have also worked with Uzbekistan, obviously, and with mm-hmm. Kyrgyzstan in your various capacities.
And Pakistan.
And Pakistan, of course. Yeah, deputy chief of mission in Pakistan and Afghanistan. So you know the region. I mean, you're
yes.
somebody who clearly knows Central
yes.
Asia here in Washington. And as you just pointed out, diplomacy sometimes can be about personalities, too.
Oh, yes.
You have, let's see, two new ambassadors going to the region, one being Ian Kelly to Georgia and then Sheila Gwaltney to Kyrgyzstan.
Mm-hmm.
Just briefly, who are ambassadors? What should people expect when they are seeing in a new ambassador from Washington?
There is almost always what we call a honeymoon period, like after a wedding. For the first several months, people put aside the differences and everything is positive and you look for ways to establish the best possible relationship for the future. That's what new ambassadors normally do. And I think that's going to happen. We have chosen our government, our administration. Our president has chosen very good new ambassadors for Kyrgyzstan and for Tajikistan. And this is not because we're removing old ambassadors. It's just part of the normal rotation in diplomatic life.
You're always very diplomatic, and you're always very kind. You're kind of a cool guy, you know. You're always smiling. You're incredibly professional. Has there been any, let's see, time during the talks and discussions when you sort of lose your cool? When there is, what is unacceptable for you during the diplomatic conversations, for example?
I think maybe a little bit more in the future I can answer more candidly. I do remember one diplomatic give and take where I got so exasperated with my partner on the other side of the table that I picked up my papers, threw them over my shoulder.
Wow.
And said, you come back when you're going to be serious. And I walked out.
That's like in the movies.
It's like in the movies. But I only did that once. More importantly, what is essential is to find a way to establish a human relationship. What is that point where you can connect? Because as soon as you begin to build a human relationship with another world leader, senior officials in another country, then you can have candid conversations. Then you can talk honestly. And that's when you build really solid diplomatic relationships.
One of major criticisms that we hear very often about U.S. policymakers, diplomats specifically, is that, well, they don't know the region. They don't know Central Asia. They don't get it. And we criticize the regional officials, too, saying that, well, you don't really understand America. How true is that notion?
There is some degree of truth on both sides, okay? Because unless you have grown up in a culture, unless you have native use of a language so that you know what each word means at several different layers, then it's rather hard to totally 100% always understand.
Do you have to be a regional country expert?
What I was going to add is our diplomats, especially our younger diplomats, are so committed to being good, to being good social scientists, to being good sociologues, things like that, that they soon learn to understand a country very well. I wish I could give you copies of some of the diplomatic reporting that I have seen recently from our embassies in Central Asia.
I would love to read them.
I know everyone would. But it's not that people are saying, this is wrong, that is wrong. No. What they're saying is, this is how we understand the country. This is how we think people live. This is how we think the government works. I am very proud of our diplomats because they help us understand. Now, do we always get it right? No. That's part of diplomatic bureaucracy. But I'm very proud of my diplomatic colleagues. I think they are superb.
I should add that you also worked with the Caucasus, right, for several years. You also focused on that region, too, in your career.
To a degree. I have traveled and worked with the countries of South Caucasus, Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan. And, in fact, in my most recent trip, I stopped in Baku for a day and had some very positive meetings there, too.
What kind of challenges will Ambassador Ian Kelly and Sheila Gwaltney face when they go to these countries? If they were, I guess, to ask for your advice.
If they would ask for my advice, and a few already have, I would say be patient. Don't jump to conclusions. Get to know the country. Don't stay inside your bubble. Get outside of the golden cage, travel around the country, meet people, and be a little bit humble. We're not always right, but we want to understand things properly.
As someone who's been very much involved in U.S. policy towards Central Asia for the past, let's say, quarter of a century, are there things that you could look back and point to as success, for example, like if we were to go country by country, in each country? Major success, achievement, in your view?
I think that the major successes and achievements would be really small things that wouldn't register in the pages of world history. Having dinner with a family in Bukhara, for example. Traveling through the Pamir Mountains. Things like that. But if you want to think of more traditional diplomatic achievements, I was the U.S. government's director for Central Asia and Caucasus at 9/11. the great attack on the United States. And in the following months, I helped negotiate. I was the lead negotiator for the framework agreements between the United States and Uzbekistan, the United States and Tajikistan, and the United States and Kyrgyzstan. And I'm still very proud of that. I think that was an important moment when we came together with the support of Russia, I would add. And that was, even though it was a tragedy, it was a great moment in diplomatic history, I think.
Looking forward to the future.
Yeah.
What worries you most as someone, again, who knows the region?
I just had lunch. I was hosted by Uzbekistan's ambassador, Gulyamov, and he asked the same question. And I said, absolutely, honestly, and transparently, at this moment, I have no concrete plans. I want to step back for the first time in many years, take a little bit of time for myself. I want a little bit of space and then re-engage in a new way. What that new way will be for my interests in Central Asia, I don't know, but I'm certain there will be something.
Any major issues that your colleagues should be looking out in the region that they should keep their eyes on, other than the usual problems we have?
Oh, other than the usual problems, day-to-day problems,
yes.
Day-to-day diplomacy. I would say that in American diplomacy, one of the most important things we can achieve is mutually respectful relations with our partners, mutual understanding with our partners. And you know what? That's not always possible because governments can be difficult. Foreign governments, from my point of view, can be difficult. My government can be difficult. We know that. The most important thing is to establish the people-to-people relationships because all over the world, people are much the same. They want a good life. They want a better life for their children. They want a successful life. And as we establish people-to-people relationships, we understand each other better. And that then can cushion some of the more difficult periods in high-level diplomatic life.
To what extent have the Central Asian states been able to produce professional diplomats? You have dealt with various generations of diplomats by now.
I think they've done extraordinarily well.
Really?
Extraordinary.
Do they have, like, foreign service at this point? What do you think?
Yes, of course. Every country has its own diplomatic service. As I said, I now know almost all the foreign ministers in the region. I've known them for many years, with only a few exceptions. I have the highest respect for them. I look at their younger colleagues and think, oh, you're going to be good. You know, you really know how to do this. I have no doubt that in a very short period of time, in 20, 23 years, each country has established a very strong, positive diplomatic service.
Has U.S. helped in the process?
We have from time to time, but I wouldn't say we have been dominant. We have offered training, of course. We have offered capacity building. I hope that we have, by example, helped people understand how international diplomacy works. But there are good diplomatic services in each country because the people are good.
You have served, if I'm not mistaken, under six presidents, right? Did you start during President Carter or earlier?
1985,
Reagan
been President
period.
Reagan,
yeah. So you have served under five presidents.
Well, yeah.
Before the world knew of Central Asia, to an extent that it does now. If you were to obviously, you know, look at your career and analyze, obviously each president had its own unique approach when it came to the region, right? the priorities, the attention level. Anything that stands out? Who do you think had the best strategy? You don't have to compare, but you could tell us about some unique approaches that, for example, President Bush had when the Soviet Union broke up, and then came the Clinton period, which was also very critical as it relates to Central Asia, and then Bush, and now Obama.
Well, I'm not going to make any political statements, because one of the hallmarks of an American diplomat is that we are nonpartisan. We serve whatever president is in office, regardless of political party. We serve the American people. We serve the American government. I think the question you asked would open another hour of conversation, because I can think of many moments.
You could write a book about this.
Oh, many people have said that, but who wants to read, you know, former ambassadors' books?
Oh, you would be surprised. A lot of people would write.
We'll see.
If I could make any suggestions, I would start with your childhood in small town Indiana.
Oh.
I know where you come from, because I went to school in small town Indiana.
Yes.
I am a graduate of Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. I know that not many people have a lot of knowledge about the world, in that part of the world. It is a small world when you are in those towns. How do you explain, when you go back to your hometown, how do you explain to them what you did for a living, what you do for a living?
Oh, my goodness. You know what? I'll tell you, in reality, most are not very interested. I learned very early in my career, when I would go back and I'd be very proud and say, I work for the State Department. They would say, oh, which state? I would say, I'm a diplomat. And it was just beyond their understanding. Good people, you know, educated people, but a different way of looking at the world.
Why? Why do you think they're not as interested? Because you would think that with America having something to do in pretty much every part of the world, and you have, you know, Americans in towns like Fort Wayne, for example, where you come from, where they don't seem to care as much.
Well, you know, there are always people who do have a broader perspective on the world, and I can't deny that. But we are a very large country. We have been, to be blunt, a dominant country for a long time, but we tend to look inward. We look at our everyday lives. We aren't as focused, in general, our population, on other parts of the world. So I'm not criticizing. It's just part of the reality.
And it's not
think.
Unique just to the United
it's
States.
It's not unique
it
just
anywhere,
to the United States.
Course.
Certainly not. I mean, go to a small village in United Kingdom. Go to a small village in Japan. Go to a small village in Siberia, Russia. And how much do they know about the world? A little bit.
But I'm sure the people of Fort Wayne are very proud of you. The people of Indiana Hoosiers are very proud of you.
Well, thank you.
And we hope that you remain engaged and involved in Central Asia so that we get to talk to you.
I hope so, too. I want to. Let's see. Pasmotrim.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
My real
pleasure.
Thank you so much.